2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
Hey, everybody. JJ Cooper, Jeff Ponce. Roki Sasaki is coming to the U.S., and we actually waited a full day to record this podcast / video to talk about it, which for us is a lot of restraint. But Jeff, I think we've been waiting for this day for years, but at the same time, I also feel like it's surprisingly early that we're already finding that Roki Sasaki is headed to the U.S. What was your initial reaction?
Yeah, you know, I had figured when the stories were getting floated out there that there was obviously some smoke behind it. I think when you look at sort of his background, the fact that, you know, when he did sign, which is a little different than Shohei Ohtani, there was a marketing company that signed him to a contract before he was drafted. It was obviously a big star, was the number one pick in that draft back in 2019, right? 2019, held him off for a season. I think we had all anticipated that he would make the jump at some point. It was a matter of, you know, does he do what Yamamoto did, which is, you know, hold off until he's 25. He's then no longer considered an amateur on the international stage. There's no cap on how much he can sign for. And his team, Chiba Lode, would have the ability to or accrue, or I guess recuperate, whatever you want to call it, 20% $20 million of that bonus. That's sort of the cap number. Now they're just at 20%. And depending upon which class he signs in, because the Dodgers do have the most money left in the 2024 bonus pool, it could be like $200,000. It's like a 20% of whatever he signs for. And I think the Dodgers have, I'm paraphrasing here, around maybe 2.5 million left.
And that's 2.5 million for a pitcher who I would say it's fair to say he is not as established. He is not as fully formed as Yoshinobu Yamamoto, who came over last year. But considering his age, considering his upside, I would say that a contract not far short of that would be possible. I would say that easily we would be talking about $150 million on a long-term deal if he was on the truly the free market, which he's not. Instead, much like we saw with Shohei Ohtani, it's going to be a couple million dollars. And that's the first thing that does jump out to me about this is one of those rare cases where, again, we'll see kind of when he's posted will tell us a lot. They've announced that they're going to post him. When you post him, that begins a 45-day negotiation period. If he posts basically before, effectively December 1st or before, because there's also this dead period, this time from December 15th ends this year's signing period and January 15th starts next year's signing period. So if he's posted before December 2nd, he will only be eligible for this year's signing period. If he posted on December 15th, which is the final day of the posting period, he would effectively only be eligible for the for the 2025 signing period. Now, I would say if you're Chiba Lode, you would be foolhardy to post him before 2025, because even if you were only going to get a fraction of what you could get on a free agent posting deal, you're still going to get a fraction of that fraction, because no team has their full allotment left for 2024. And Jeff, I would say it's safe to say, is although this would be a little bit underhanded in some ways, I would imagine that there are multiple teams who would be willing to essentially blow up their planned international class for 25 to try to land Roki Sasaki.
Well, you know, I'll say this though. I do feel that the timing is there's an intention as to why it was released when it was, and the information was out a week before that with Kylie McDaniel of ESPN kind of being the first one to sort of put it out there. Of course, the team then reports it, or the other thing I think we need to keep in mind is when it comes to Japan and their coverage of the teams, that there's sort of like two different segments of the media. There is like the official media, the actual standard media. Those, they do not try to break news. They report things when they come out. there's more of the tabloid side of things, which does try to break news. And they often are the ones that break news over there. This came from a team source. So I think that's, you know, one thing to keep in mind. This is actually going to happen. The other part of this is if there was some sort of agreement put in place, you know, between the Mariners and, you know, between Suzuki when he, excuse me, Sasaki, when
Marines.
He first, it's the Marines. Oh, it's the Marines, not yes. The Mariners. It was the Mariners.
Sure. All the right. Chibolote Marines. Yeah.
So I've just been looking at Chibolote. So that there you go. But, and I also called them Suzuki and not Sasaki, but anyway, but, when Sasaki signed that contract, he was also the last person to sign in that class. There was some apparently somewhat difficult negotiations. That might have been what the stipulation was, is when we ask you to post us, we want to be posted. Now, what's the benefit for the team there? Well, they get a hold of that guy's rights, right? They sell jerseys. They sold tickets. No. They sold merchandise. You know, it's not a net zero bringing that guy into your organization.
But let me interject here. That's why he's being posted now.
Yeah,
I can't imagine that the agreement when he signed out of high school was, hey, we're going to do this. You know, was he high school or college? I'm now blanking.
He was high school because he came out of the tournament. School,
yeah.
He set a record.
He thought about going, you know, straight to the US.
Yeah.
But I don't think that there was any part of that agreement that said, and by the way, when you post me, you need to make sure that you post me so I'm at the tail end of a class rather than, because they could post him on December 5th, December 10th, and he's still being posted. It would just open up the doors much wider for other teams to get involved.
Sure.
Which gives Chibolote a little bit more money.
Which I understand. I think the other side of it is we all think he probably wants to go to the Dodgers, right? At this point in time, this is the most ideal window for the Dodgers to sign him. And I say that because they have the most money left in the bonus pool. They have like 2.5 or around there. If I remember correctly, there was kind of a random trade that was made some point either last offseason or early this season where the Dodgers acquired pool money, if I can remember. I got to go back and double check on that. But I wonder if this has been in the works for a while. And I just, it doesn't blow anything up.
Okay.
If he signs with it, because there's all these other deals that are done for January that were agreed upon 2 years ago. And do you really want to let, you know, an international free agent you get from the Dominican Republic or from Venezuela that you signed for 800,000, a million, 1.5, 2.5, 3 million. Are you going to let that guy walk in order to sign Sasaki? Maybe you are, but doesn't that
the answer is yes.
But doesn't that long term hurt your standing with the folks that you have to negotiate with in the international market? Because there's so many players that come through these, you know,
I'm not saying it does, but that also happens already.
Sure. But does it happen to the best of the best? That because I think that's really the type of money you're gonna require to sign this guy. I think that's the interesting angle here. Is there this could get done really quickly? I think there is a chance this could get done really quickly because I'm not sure he even wants to negotiate with other teams. And we've seen that with Japanese players before that they're not considering going to Atlanta. You know, more often than not, Seattle and California seem to be the most ideal locations, you know, with some historic stuff with New York, Texas, Boston's had a few, and the Cubs.
Well, okay. So more importantly, we've kind of been Roki Sasaki nuts for quite a while. For me, I would say, I will say it 1,000 times. He already has had the best back-to-back pitch games, I believe, in history, like not in Japanese history, not in NPB in the 21st century history. I think history. And I had someone, I kind of posted this on social and someone said, Johnny Vandermeer, you know, says, hold my beer. And it's like, no. So Roki Sasaki threw a perfect game as a 20-year-old and then followed it up by throwing 8 innings of a perfect game and got pulled because he had just thrown a complete game, perfect game in his previous start. And they're like, he's 20. We don't want to overdo him. So he retired 51 batters in a row. He struck out 19 in his perfect game. Johnny Vandermeer walked 11 in his back-to-back no-hitters.
Perfect games. Exactly. And that, and that strikeout, 13 consecutive strikeouts, is a world record. Like,
you know. It's not a world record. It's a world record at the top level, professional level, because there's an Appy League.
We're going to consider pitcher. World records, right?
Professional, it's not. There's an Appy League pitcher, you know, back in the 50s. Hmm. But I'm pretty sure did 13 in a row because I think he struck out 27. So
yeah, I remember looking at the box score, but it's listed as world record. So that's
But I will say I tried to go back and research every perfect game that ever happened in any high level, including college. And the only pitcher I could find in professional baseball or high level amateur baseball who has two perfect games in their career was a pitcher in the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League in the late 40s, early 50s. Sasaki almost did back-to-back perfect games. And no one, like, again, Nolan Ryan's throwing 7-0 hitters. He never threw a perfect game. Perfect games are truly rare. So that's a long lead-in, say, to Jeff, though, because you've seen him. You got to be at the World Baseball Classic. I'm very jealous. But so what would a team getting Roki Sasaki be getting?
I think you're getting one of the top young pitchers in the game. I think this is somebody that a year ago, you know, prior to Paul Skeen's dominance, prior to the Splinker, this was the number one pitching prospect in the world. I think now, you know, Skeens isn't a pitching prospect any longer, but he's on that plane. So we're comparing top talents. Skeens is past him. I think certainly that could change. It really could. It certainly could change in the future. But I think, you know, when you look at the season that Skeens has had at this point, you're going to take the easy money with Skeens. That being said, you know, when we talk about Bubba Chandler, we talk about Jackson Jobe, you know, the Andrew Painter, the pitchers that are within that ilk, I think you're going Sasaki. You may argue that Jobe's fastball shape right now is better. But then I can go and I can look at, you know, the fact that how hard he throws still, and it's not an awful fastball. It's a deadly splitter. I watched pretty much all of his 23 and 24 seasons yesterday as I was writing something up that will come up on the site, you know, early this week. And I mean, it's a devastating splitter, really is. I was actually showing it to my wife last night and was like, look at, like, it's like 5 feet from the plate, it just changes direction. It just goes, it's like a roller coaster, you know, it goes up the hill and then just drops. The slider is really good as well. And the numbers against the slider have been awesome. Even this season where he took a little bit of a step backward. I was really impressed with his secondaries and his ability to command them and kind of tunnel it off of similar release heights to his fastball. You know, everything sort of plays pretty similarly. And I think there's some stuff in the data that I looked at that might have been a focal point for Sasaki this offseason, was getting more extension, getting his release points at a similar point.
So I think, okay, one of the things that is notable that people have kind of gravitated to is, and I want you to kind of talk, because you've done some real work on this. Yes, his velo did back up this year. Now, when we say back up, Roki Sasaki didn't become a soft tosser. He's all of a sudden not reaching back for 102 whenever he wants it. Like, he's kind of become a soft tosser like Hunter Green's become a soft tosser, because Hunter Green's not getting 102, 103 on a more regular basis now. Like, but I again, that's a kind of a no-brainer acquisition when you're talking about, oh, I'm going to devote a couple of million dollars to him, and I'm going to sign him to a minor league contract. And by the way, he'll be paid major league minimum for his first year and his second year, and probably his third, could be arbitration eligible by then. Then he'll be arbitration eligible for 5 years, and free agency will come after year six at the earliest. Like, these are not like decisions that you would really worry about as a team, because you're not devoting the resources enough here for this to be a risk. But how much is there a durability and an injury risk here, Jeff?
Yeah, I think you look at any pitcher, and we can look at this from American starters, particularly highly touted high school players, college arms. The best ability as a pitcher is availability, and there's a very easy way to identify guys that stay healthy. It's simply by looking at innings. I believe he's never exceeded 130 innings in a season. I think 129.1 or something like that might be his highest workload. That's a little concerning. There's been some wear and tear, especially when I see a pitcher that throws as hard as he does. And then there's some stuff in the data that I can certainly go into if you'd like me to, in terms of just some of the things I'm seeing behind the scenes that could be hinting at a potential injury or something that was masked. I could certainly go into that if you want me to.
You're talking about the release point, really, aren't you?
Yeah. So the fastball is down about 2 miles per hour this year. Was 97.1 was the average. It averaged 99 on the dot.
I'm posting on here Synergies, and which has been 96.9, but we don't have to.
Sure. Yeah. And this is data that I got via some contacts from non-public sources. So I trust this data very, very much. The other thing I'm noticing is like a 95. So like we know 90th percentile exit velocity. We're talking about hitters, 95th percentile velo, 99 this year. Last year, his 95th percentile velo was 101.2. So there has been a drop in terms of velocity. That's fine. The spin is down about 100 RPMs year over year. It's a very similar spin axis. But the things that we're noticing that are significantly different, vertical break is down about 2 inches, or actually 2 inches on the nose this year. He lost some horizontal break, over 2 inches of horizontal break, but he added about a foot of extension. So he was a below average, you know, short strider type. It was about 6 feet to 6'3", on the fastball splitter. This year, he was consistent on all pitch types at 7 feet. The interesting thing is you would think adding a foot of extension would drop your arm height down, right? It would, your release point would ultimately get lower, because that's one of the things that feeds into a lower release height is that extension. It didn't. His release height stayed nearly identical to what it was last year at about 6 feet. His side release was about the same. The things that I'm noticing, though, VAA, which is a really easy way to sort of reverse engineer fastball or four seam efficiency, kind of just to reiterate what that means, is the amount of spin that's actively contributing to movement. The best of the best, they're at 98% to 100% in terms of their four seam spin efficiency. Where that shows up is VAA. So he was a 6 foot release height last year. VAA was about 4.7 degrees. This year it jumped up to 5. So despite that added extension, he had less efficiency, which was impacting the approach angle to the plate on the pitch, and was not getting as much hop, which is fine. You know, if he dropped to 16 from 18, but it's a 5.4 release height and it's a 4.3 VAA, that's a better pitch. So there's some elements that improved. Certainly more extension is never bad, but if the more extension led to a less effective fastball plane, which we see in the swing and miss rate, which was 13% in 2024, it was 26% the previous year. So against the same competition, same level, same league, it backed up. So that tells me that there's some shape stuff, some efficiency stuff. That's all fixable things, though. I think the fact that he added that foot, maybe there's some middle ground, maybe there's some stuff with his arm slot. I do get a little concerned with this, though. When a guy goes down, drops in velocity, loses spin, adds extension, but his arm slot doesn't drop, it reminds me of junior year at Vanderbilt, Kumar Rocker. If you remember, was always more of a three-quarters guy. And then when we knew that there was something wrong with the elbow and the shoulder, he went more over the top. So I don't know if it's an injury. I don't know if it was he had the intention of trying to do this and it just didn't work out, frankly, which does happen sometimes with pitching development. You try something out, something's working and it doesn't fully click. I'm not sure. You know, I think there's some slight differences, obviously, in the delivery if you're adding a foot of extension. So I'm interested to see how that shakes out, because you know, comparing one year from the next, there's definitely, you know, some dichotomy between the two shapes and the two fastballs, where really his splitter and slider didn't change much.
And as you saw, his whiff percentage on those pitches kind of stayed. It was the fastball that really kind of backed up.
Yeah.
But the thing that jumps out to me about this is, you know, this is kind of almost, it's not quibbling, right? These are things that are absolutely teams are looking at. They're absolutely there. There is kind of one of the things when I talk to scouts about Roki Sasaki that's been mentioned is he's in no way a finished product yet, mm-hmm. not just in durability, but like when Yamamoto was coming over, it was where there really was this belief that this is the guy who really just knows how to pitch, who sure. kind of has an understanding of what he's doing, you know, really controls his body, his delivery, all this. And Roki Sasaki, kind of, there is a feeling of that it's a little bit more of like, it's an unpolished gem right now that could still, which is kind of frightening. He could still get better, you know, kind of that as well. But the other part of this that I would say with that is when you throw in that there are durability issues here, I kind of would, you know, give an analogy of is would you ask a team, would they be interested in, you know, having Garrett Crochet? In having Spencer Strider. Spencer Strider has already had two TJs now, right? But at the same time, you would love to have Spencer Strider. You know, Spencer Strider's durability issues are much bigger than Roki Sasaki's have been. Roki Sasaki just hasn't shown that ability to have that year, that inning, you know, that year where he throws 180 innings, mm-hmm. 90 innings. However, he also, you know, it's been more oblique. It's been things like that more so, at least so far, rather than he's had his elbow cut on multiple times. Garrett Crochet, the reason I bring up Crochet, I know that they're very different pitchers. But Garrett Crochet, you know, if a team looks at trying to acquire Garrett Crochet this offseason, they're doing so knowing that he's really only had 1 year of doing this at the level that he did last year as a starter. You know, he's, and really, if you go back in his track record, a lot of it not his fault, but you don't have any other years like that going back to pre-pandemic because of him having injuries, but also the pandemic and him working as a reliever and all that, where there are young pitchers who you would say, okay, there's, you know, Jackson Jobe. When we talk about Jackson Jobe or Andrew Painter just missed effectively 2 years. Jackson Jobe has been semi-durable, but he's also missed time every year because of injuries. And that's kind of kept him from really having that year so far where he's given you the innings where you're like, okay, he's ready for a full workload next year. The best way I could put it is we're kind of quibbling on that. This is like, these are the things that would need to be in a report if someone's writing up like, but the first question is do we want to acquire Roki Sasaki? The answer is yes, 1,000 times yes. And that's true for all 30 teams. Like, these are things where I got to be honest, like, I hope he doesn't go to the Dodgers, not because I'm anti-Dodgers or anything like that, but just because the Dodgers are as good as it gets. They're World Series champions. They're there every year. They just added Ohtani and Yamamoto last offseason.
When creating your own business, the most important part is your ideas. So why let the headache of registering your business hold those ideas back? It's time to learn about a great idea that will keep you going and growing, LegalZoom. LegalZoom has everything you need to launch, run, and protect your business all in one place. Setting up your business properly and remaining compliant are things you want to get right from the get-go, but you don't have to strain your brain or wallet. LegalZoom saves you from wasting hours making sense of the legal stuff. At LegalZoom.com, you can take care of business legal needs in just a few clicks. And if you need some hands-on help, their network of experienced attorneys from around the country has your back. Over the last 20 years, LegalZoom helped start, run, and protect millions of businesses. LegalZoom, now you're in business. Launch, run, and protect your business to make it official today at LegalZoom.com and use promo code BASEBALL to get 10% off any LegalZoom business formation product, excluding subscriptions and renewals. Expires 12/31/24. Get everything you need from setup to success at LegalZoom.com and use promo code BASEBALL. LegalZoom.com and use promo code BASEBALL. Disclaimer, LegalZoom provides access to independent attorneys and self-service tools. LegalZoom is not a law firm and does not provide legal advice except where authorized through its subsidiary law firm, LZ Legal Services, LLC.
No team wins the World Series without having great teamwork. And teamwork can also protect your financial legacy and your family's future. SelectQuote's licensed insurance agents are the perfect teammates when shopping for customized, affordable life insurance. They can find you the right policy to keep your financial legacy safe. SelectQuote is one of America's leading insurance brokers with nearly 40 years of experience helping over 2 million customers find over $700 billion in coverage since 1985. Other life insurance brokers offer impersonal one-size-fits-all policies that may cost you more and cover you less, while SelectQuote's licensed insurance agents work for you to tailor a life insurance policy for your individual needs in as little as 15 minutes. You invest so much time to take care of yourself and be the healthiest, best version of you. SelectQuote's exclusive policies can reward that effort. If you're in good health, they work with carriers that get you same-day coverage for up to $5 million with no medical exam required. And these policies are more affordable than you may think. You can get coverage for up to $1 million for as little as $20 per month. Head to SelectQuote.com and a licensed insurance agent will call you right away with the right policy for your life and your budget. SelectQuote, they shop, you save. Get the right life insurance for you for less at SelectQuote.com/BA. Go to SelectQuote.com/BA today to get started. That's SelectQuote.com/BA. When it comes to hiring, don't go searching for the one. Just meet your match with Indeed. If you hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed at Baseball America is that it makes hiring easy. Everything's in one place. I get my applications. I get notifications when I get new applications. I get to contact prospective candidates all on Indeed. I can move people to the next level all on Indeed, and we can keep all of everyone on staff involved in the hiring process up to date, all at Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BaseballAmerica. Just go to Indeed.com/BaseballAmerica right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BaseballAmerica. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. They're adding Sasaki makes them slightly more interesting, slightly more impressive, but they're already incredible. They're already a team that you know right now you can ride into the playoffs next year. I would be much more excited by if Roki Sasaki ended up in San Francisco, if Roki Sasaki ended up in New York, you know, with the Mets or something, where a team where you're like, okay, this player is really going to, again, I don't think he's going to end up in Texas, but Texas. I mean, okay, if I could dream, like, you know, Kansas City, you know, but I do Minnesota, Cleveland, like we could go down the list, but like, I think that if Roki Sasaki goes somewhere where he's not going to be the third biggest star acquisition that the team has made in the past 2 years, I think that's good for baseball, I guess is the way to put it. Even if I do think there's a pretty good chance he might end up with the Dodgers.
I said, we'll see. I think that there's just too many things, too many breadcrumbs for me looking at this and saying, I think it's set up for him to go to the Dodgers. But we'll see, you know, certainly the Mariners can get involved. You know, a lot of these teams do have the ability to make interesting pitches, I'm sure. And I guess the other part of it too is, you know, how much does he want to be, you know, his own guy, or does he want to go there and play with some veteran Japanese players, which I've heard at times kind of off the record that guys don't always necessarily want to go where there's another older Japanese star. But I don't know if there's any truth to that or not. So, you know, I don't know if that's a factor.
The other thing I would say is that it will be interesting to see. In Japan, pitchers traditionally throw on what could be described as a kind of more of a college schedule, a once a week schedule, because there's kind of a scheduled off day. And so I wouldn't be shocked at all if a team especially with Sasaki's lack of that, you know, 180 inning season on his resume, if you said that a team acquiring Sasaki was looking at going with a 6-man rotation, it wouldn't shock me. Mm-hmm. Okay. Again, this unfortunately leads you down to, So would a team that has Shohei Ohtani coming back off of TJ and has Yamamoto and has Tony Gonsolin coming off of shoulder, you know, of surgery, and may have Dustin May back, and has we could go down the list.
Tyler Glass now, who's always injured and can only throw about.
Clayton Kershaw could be back. Yeah, like there would be no team that you could more pick out that would make sense to go with a 6-man rotation.
And especially considering they have that guy who hits as their DH, who's more or less two players in one. I think that's sometimes got to be factored into the equation. It's why when Ohtani hit the market last year, it's like, this gives you some flexibility to maybe carry another pitcher on your active 26-man roster that you may not typically.
The one last thing I wanted to say about Sasaki, just giving him credit, is even in this last year where, again, his stuff backed up a little bit, he also has control. Yeah. Like, his strike percentage on his fastball all 4 years in the NPB is over 70%. His strike percentage on his slider is over 60%. And his strike percentage until this year on his splitter was over 60%, which, by the way, like, you know, that splitter, that's kind of an absurd number in some ways, because again, he's getting his whiff percentage on his splitter has been over 50% each of the last 3 years.
And it's not like a pitch that's in the zone. You know, it's not one of these more traditional changeups where it's got, you know, some tumble and fade and it kind of fades into that corner of the strike zone on the outside or whatever. You know, it comes in like a fastball, and then 5 feet before, like I said, it hits the dive on the roller coaster, and it goes to the bottom, you know.
When that pitch, when he's got the two, like when he threw the perfect game, he didn't really need the slider in the perfect game. When he's got the splitter working like it's working with his fastball, because on that day, that was one of those days where the fastball was unhittable, and he could just sit there and fastball, splitter. And by the way, he can get that splitter in the zone if he really needs to. Seems like he can manipulate it a little bit, but he's not going to do that much because there's no reason to. Because again, with a fastball like that, you have to kind of swing at the splitter, and then you go, why did I swing at that? Because that ball ended up, you know, basically in the dirt. And that's what makes him the best pitching prospect in baseball now. Like you said, Paul Skeens isn't eligible for that title anymore. I would say that 2 years ago, we would have said that Roky Sasaki, I wrote it actually at Baseball America, that he was the best pitching prospect in the world at that time. Yeah. Skeens took that title. I would say rightfully took that title. You know, he's going to get Cy Young votes as a rookie. But if you said best young pitcher in the world, I would say right now that's Paul Skeens. Paul Skeens fits the young.
Best pitcher under 24.
But would you take anyone else over Roky Sasaki?
No, I don't think I would. And I like Jobe and I like Bubba Chandler a lot. But I think, like, when you think about high level experience, sure, it's not the big leagues, but it's pretty good. A lot of professional hitters, a lot of experienced hitters, guys who have played in the big leagues, of course. And then, you know, pitched in the World Baseball Classic. I don't think I would take anybody over him. That's not to say that we couldn't look back on this in 5 years and be like, that was really stupid. Bubba Chandler turned out to be really, really good. Or Jackson Jobe turned out to be good. Or, you know, our concerns post-surgery with Andrew Painter were, you know, not legitimate, that he came back and was healthy and has been really good for a bunch of years. But if I had to place my bets, and I'm sure if the the folks in Vegas were making odds, it would be Sasaki. And I think when you look at the fact he throws so hard, has had success, he's as young as he is. He's only 6 months older than Paul Skeens. He just turned 23 about a week ago, actually 7 days ago, November 3rd. So just turned 23, and you got a pretty long runway on that too, that you could sign this guy. You know, if he was available as a free agent, you could sign him to a 12 or 13 year deal. And, you know, he's probably still a viable major league starter at the end of that contract. So I think when you look at all those things and then you factor in how cheap he's going to be in a team control years up front for the first 2 or 3 years, it's a no-brainer.
This is a franchise-altering guy to land. Doesn't mean we've seen with Shohei Ohtani, no one player can alter a franchise. Even having Shohei Ohtani, Mike Trout is enough to get you to playoffs if the rest of the team is terrible. But the other thing is this. We talk about Yamamoto. Like, we're not even talking about Shoto Inomaga, you know, who also was one of the better pitchers in the National League last year. And by the way, like, when you talk about, you know, the MPB is a little bit more of a pitcher's league, but 2.8 ERA for him in 23 for Yokohama, 2.91 for Chicago in 2024. Like, Yamamoto, I know he had some injuries, but that was a frontline starter. That's a 3 ERA. It's a 129 ERA plus. FIP was good. That is a guy, and that's what we're talking about with Sasaki, is a guy who you acquire him, and you just say you're writing him into your rotation for next year. You may not write him in for 180 innings. You may say, look, there's some durability. We're going to be cautious with him. But this is the kind of player that just isn't available in it, because that's where him coming over, where he's coming over now. Mm-hmm. I do hate to say it, but like, just the reality, right? Especially with, we are in a era of Major League Baseball where the big market, small market separation is growing again, because the Dodgers, the Yankees, the Mets, the teams like that,
the Phillies,
local, huh?
The Phillies. I figured they got to be mentioned too.
But they have local TV deals that aren't falling apart. They may someday, but they're not falling apart. Whereas if you say, well, what are the teams who are seeing their local TV deals fall apart and are facing a lot of uncertainty about how much money they're going to make with their local TV deals? It's the smaller market teams. Mm-hmm. It's the Royals. It's the Reds. It's, you know, the Rockies. It's, you can go that, the, you, all these teams. You notice that Diamond was right away like, hey, we're going to definitely redo the Braves. We're definitely keeping the Braves. And then like, well, what about the other ones? Well, we'll talk about it. So like, we're seeing that divide grow. And that's where this is a play. If he was coming over, if Roki Sasaki was coming over a few years from now, where he had, was an international a foreign professional, he met that those requirements, he would be at a level of a contract where most teams would say, most MLB teams would say, we'd love to have him, but we're out. He's coming over at a time. Do you remember this with Ohtani? Everyone almost made a presentation, right? Like, the Twins set aside money. They moved money. They ended up signing like some of the Braves free agents, you know, who got cast, you know, made free agents because of the international circumventions.
That's right.
But that was because they had set money aside in case they had managed to land Shohei Ohtani. You know, because again, they were doing kind of their due diligence for that. Can't imagine what, you know, what it would have been like if Shohei Ohtani had ended up in Minnesota. But that was the kind of thing that was going on this time. All 30 teams, the Tampa Bay Rays, the Miami Marlins, every team 100% not just could afford, but would be like, this is a slam dunk contract. Doesn't mean he's going to look at all 30 teams, but this is one where everyone is going to have the theoretical opportunity here.
So you had brought up, you know, that maybe it wouldn't be great if he goes to the Dodgers. So let me ask you, non-Dodgers division, eliminate them. So the other 29 teams, who would be the most exciting team for you, for Sasaki to land? What, like, what location, what team do you think it could take him over the top? Who do you think is sort of missing that piece that you're like, hey, I could see this revolution coming together, this generation of players coming together and turning into something really special. But
it will not happen.
Sure.
It will not happen. But if you just said, could I pick a team? Pittsburgh Pirates. If you had a Paul Skenes, Roki Sasaki, Jared Jones, Bubba Chandler, and take your pick, because they've got some other guys, you know.
Thomas Harrington.
If that's your rotation, I mean, that all of a sudden, with O'Neill Cruz roaming around the center field, that becomes a fascinating team, you know? Like, again, that's not going to happen, but that would be my pie in the sky. Like, Pirates fans deserve that. Pirates fans have just felt pain for so long. Like, I say this, I know that people know I'm a Steelers fan. Like, I have a football team. I don't have a baseball team. I, you know, my baseball allegiances are, I root for good baseball. I root for friends I know in the game.
Yeah.
But I do feel for Pirates fans. And I would say that that would be like, it would change, it would completely transform that franchise if they had Sasaki and Skeens. That is Spawn Insane and Pray for Rain. You know, that's the 2020s version of it. What about you?
I feel like after 3 years, though, they'd have to move either Skeens, Jones, or Sasaki, or maybe like two of the three, because they wouldn't be able to pay the arbitration numbers that would probably come up on those guys. You know, it's funny. There's maybe four or five that are kicking around my head. But I think that, you know, we look at the teams in the AL Central this year, and there were three teams that had great seasons, right? The Royals really impressed people. The Tigers obviously were, you know, just right there with the Royals as the surprise team of 2024. And the Guardians, of course, were good. I think you look at all three of those teams and you're like, they're one starter, a big starter away. A second big starter with Skubal with the Tigers would be a blast. Having that front end guy with the Guardians could potentially put them over the top and have them competing with the Yankees, right? Or the Royals, it kind of puts them into that, you know, more of like
Bobby Witt Jr. and
Orioles. Yeah, more of an Orioles situation where you have some big stars here and, you know, it's cheap. You're going to have them for a while. I think that any of those Central teams, he won't land in the Central. I don't think he wants to probably live in Middle America. I don't know. Maybe he does. But typically we see those guys end up on the West Coast. And then maybe in the big market, New York, maybe in the big market, Boston. And I think Chicago has a pretty vibrant Japanese population, if I'm not mistaken. So it's one of the reasons that they've been able to sign some Japanese players over the years, whether it's from Japan or, you know, acquire players like free agents, et cetera. So I think those are probably the destinations. I think Boston could be kind of fun. I'm obviously close, so I'd be able to go see him. But beyond that, you know, there's a good young core there. I think there's a very solid chance Anthony and Campbell might be part of that team very early on in 2025. And having Sasaki up front, I think kind of changes that team's dynamic a little bit too, where they really kind of need that frontline guy and maybe have a year to kind of figure things out and help them get adjusted. I don't know if any of these teams go in this direction. I don't know, you know, bonus pool, what he's going to acquire or require, or if it's even going to matter. Because I think that's the other thing when we look at this situation with Sasaki is, like Ohtani, he's such a marketing arm. He's not Ohtani, but, you know, he signed to this marketing contract. The company went after him in high school simply because of the endorsement numbers that Ohtani started to do. And they said, we want to get on the next guy. This was the next guy. So I think there's some intentions there. So some people behind there. There's some people that were negotiating things. And I'm sure that he doesn't care what he's making a year here. He cares about the endorsement, cares about being in a good environment, good team, place that he wants to play. And, you know, I think I remember the days before the Ohtani signing, and I think a lot of us were like Dodgers, Mariners, Rangers. And then he ended up with the Angels, which was really a surprise. So maybe that happens again.
I'll bring out two other teams and before we wrap this up. Sure. The Giants, I think, are the team that needs him the most. Because they are a West Coast team. They are a big market team. Mm-hmm. And they have fallen not just behind the Dodgers, but they've fallen behind the Padres as well. Mm-hmm. And they kind of are lacking in star power. And Sasaki could really help that. You mentioned Baltimore briefly. I would say that Baltimore is the team that would be most transformed by, like, if you said, hey, you've got Roky Sasaki to go with Grayson Rodriguez, to go with, you know, multiple pitchers coming back from injuries. Maybe they re-sign Corbin Burns. Because, by the way, this would not preclude you in any way from re-signing Corbin Burns or anything else. So that's another one. Again, the answer is yes. Like, you could take, if we went through all 30 teams, I could give a reason why. We saw it with Paul Skeens, right? Paul Skeens goes to Pittsburgh, and it didn't get them to the postseason. But he all of a sudden made them both interesting and watchable, and something where you now look at and say, they got to get him more help. But this is something where between him and Jones, they're viable now.
And they were more in contention. I use that with parentheses, but more in contention, the Pirates, than they had been in a really long time. And the fan base was engaged. And I think, you know, ultimately that's what it's about. Get the folks in the park, sell the merchandise, sell the beers, sell the hot dogs, all that sort of stuff. You know, there's obviously value to the owners in that. So it's interesting. I think, you know, Baltimore would be an interesting landing spot too. Just simply because he could sort of take over the front of that rotation. And the crazy thing to me is the Dodgers or whoever could sign this guy, and technically their payroll could go down. They could sign the biggest player on the free agent market and their payroll could go down, which is just such a remarkable baseball specific thing.
So this is a good arcane note to end this on, which is when I started writing about Shohei Ohtani at Baseball America, I was writing about when he was going to come over, and it was before the 2017 CBA. And so at that time, before the 2017 CBA, the requirements were 23 age. You had to be 23 and you had to have 5 years, if I remember off the top of my head, but 5 years of MPB or a foreign professional league experience.
Yep.
Right. And then in the 2017 CBA, which I kind of called it the Ohtani rule, they moved it up to 25 and 7 years. Now, you could also call it the Carter Stewart rule if you want, which is there is some idea that maybe the reason in some ways to do this was to preclude anyone in the rounding by going to Japan out of high school, theoretically, playing for 5 years and then being a 24-year-old monster free agent, you know, gets posted back. But whatever it is, like, it is interesting that this does mean at the end of the day, this is taken effectively, like, it's not something where this money gets shifted, really. Like, this is a player who I would say is a slam dunk because of, again, if just think of it the way if you said if Paul Skenes was a free agent right now, what would Paul Skenes get? And that's what Roki Sasaki, let's just say, take whatever Paul Skenes would get and say that you're going to give 80% of that, 85% of that to Roki Sasaki. That's what we're talking about. And it is interesting that this doesn't mean that it shifts money to other pitchers. It kind of means that a team is going to sign Sasaki and it probably takes them out of needing to spend as much in the free agent market on pitching because, well, we got our ace. We made our big move. Yes, it cost us pocket change rather than $140 million, $160, $180 million. But it's going to, for whoever does so, it probably will be their big move.
And my guess, and I don't, there's nothing on this, on the books or anything like that. My guess would be that there's some stipulation, there's something, wink, wink, nudge, nudge among the teams that you're not allowed to sign this guy to an extension in the first 3 years.
Oh, it is not wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Is it?
Story of Baseball America. Basically, okay. MLB has in this, there are so many things you cannot do. If the best way I can put it is, if you try to think of a loophole to where you can try to figure out an inducement for Sasaki to come, and by the way, we're going to do this. Essentially, MLB has a blanket thing that says, other than the signing bonus, that's it. You can't promise him he'll be on your opening day roster. Now, we know he will, but sure, that by itself is an illegal inducement. You can't tell him that you're going to, you know, give him a penthouse. You can't tell him that you're going to give him a car. You can't tell him, don't worry, that we're going to sign you to a long-term extension. Let's start talking about it now. Eventually, he can sign an extension, but you cannot, if it comes out in any way that you were talking about that parameters of that deal before he signed, they will void the contract and potentially ban that team from signing any player internationally for a year, suspend people involved in it, and have multiple other years of reductions in how much you can spend internationally. And by the way, we do have an example of this because the Braves did actually do under the table inducements, and they were banned from signing international players for over $10,000 because of it. So they're very strict about this.
Yeah, I didn't realize that there was anything on the actual books about not being able to offer. Yeah,
check it out, baseballamerica.com. We have more Sasaki stories than you could probably read, but one of them is just covering every loophole that there is there.
Awesome.
So we're getting to wrap this up. We're recording this on a Sunday evening. We're going to go back to, you know, finishing our weekend. But Jeff, thank you for the time. It's fun to talk Sasaki.
Yeah, absolutely. Exciting.
For Jeff, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.